the adrenaline that's shooting off in the electricity, he captures it right there on paper.
Ladies and gentlemen, Al Hirschfeld.
Well, I've drawn ever since I could hold a pencil. Actually, all kids draw. I just never stopped.
Welcome to the Hirschfeld Century Podcast. I'm David Leopold, the creative director of the Al Hirschfeld Foundation.
And I'm Catherine Eastman, the archives manager.
And today we are talking about Ilya Kazan.
Yes. This was my suggestion. And you kind of were dismissive about it at first.
I was because, a director, there are a number of portraits of Kazan, but I felt that perhaps there wasn't enough. But of course, as you do research with Hirschfeld, you discover that not only is there enough, there are too many.
There are 47 drawings that are related
at
to
least
Kazan.
47 drawings. Right. We could probably find a few others that would qualify.
Yes.
Ilya Kazan was described by the New York Times as one of the most honored and influential directors on Broadway and Hollywood history. He is noted for drawing out the best dramatic performances from his actors. He directed 21 actors to Oscar nominations, resulting in 9 wins. Mm-hmm. During his career, he won 2 Oscars as best director and received an honorary Oscar. He won 3 Tony Awards and 4 Golden Globes. Wow. He was an extremely important figure, not just in Hollywood, where we can really see his work today, but on the Broadway stage. He got started with the group theater in 1932 when he joined. The group theater was a very important acting company, left-wing acting company, who were rewriting what it was to be in an American drama on stage.
Mm-hmm. And who was in the, like, I know Lee Strasberg was part of the group theater.
Oh, Lee Strasberg. Yeah. According to Kazan, Lee Strasberg was sort of the glue that held the whole thing together. Mm. It was nominally organized by Harold Clurman, who would be a great director, Stella Adler, a great actress and eventually acting teacher, Lee Strasberg, who was an actor and eventually a great acting teacher. They used Stanislavski's approach to acting. This more drawn actors drawing from their own life. It is hard to understand today how important the group theater was, how important Lee Strasberg and what was later known as the method form of acting, because today that is all second nature.
Right,
drawing
That's
on
the
your
only
own
thing you do.
Right,
yeah.
You draw on your own experiences. If you're in a film and somebody dies, you remember when someone in your life died.
Right.
Not every actor does it, but a majority of them do. But in 1932, when the group theater was forming, the American theater was not a place that many people would like to see today. Mm. There were wonderful shows and wonderful songs and musicals. The dramas of the period before this are not revived too often today. There's Eugene O'Neill, of course.
Sure.
Some George Kaufman comedies. But for the most part, the plays aren't revived because they're not very good.
Mm. And why was that?
Well, it was because they were still very much involved with sort of 19th century storytelling.
Mm.
You know, they were using a lot of cliches. Mm. There was all these sort of polite manners and limitations that actors and directors of what you could do.
Mm. Interesting.
And the group theater really helped to push that beyond.
Mm.
Because not only in their style of acting, but they reached out to new playwrights. So, in fact, the first show that Kazan is in is Men in White.
Right.
The hospital drama. That seems like it's been around forever. It's been around since 1933, when Sidney Kingsley had written the hospital drama.
Mm.
Hirschfeld would later say that the playwright Sidney Kingsley, was responsible for the hospital drama and the detective drama. You know,
Big part of TV today, also.
It's been a big part of TV for 60, 70
years. Between General Hospital and Law and Order.
Well, certainly those, ER,
yeah,
Chicago Hope, House. All the hospital dramas today, and a lot of the Cops and Robbers shows.
Grey's Anatomy. Yeah.
Jeez,
there's so many.
There's a lot. And those really, you don't, there's nothing like that
before
Men in White.
Wow.
And Men in White dealt with abortion. I mean, these were not issues that were discussed, let alone in society or on stage.
Or on stage, yeah.
So the group theater, terribly, terribly important. And Kazan worked with them. He was invited to come along. They would go to a summer retreat and really work together. It was almost communal living. After they spent a summer, his first summer with the group theater, Lee Strasberg and Howard Klarman pull Kazan aside and says, "You may have a talent for something, but it's certainly not acting." that did not deter Kazan. Yeah. And it didn't deter the group theater. He was a member of the group theater. They would put him in productions. He had a small role in Men in White. Hirschfeld did a drawing of the original production in October 1933. It featured three performers in the play. Not one of them was Kazan.
Kazan is not one.
Kazan was in a play the following year called Gold Eagle Guy. Hirschfeld's drawing shows six different performers on stage. Kazan is not one of them. It's really not until 1935 when Kazan appears in Clifford Odets Waiting for Lefty.
Right. He's finally drawn. Yeah.
And he's drawn because he's so significant.
Right. It's kind of his breakout role as an actor.
Yes. Certainly his most significant role as an actor, period.
Oh, really? Ever?
Waiting for Lefty is about, it's a union meeting and it's taxi drivers and they're deciding whether they're going to strike or not because of the way they've been treated. And it's Kazan who at the end of the play is saying, "Strike, strike, strike." And Hirschfeld captured that in his drawing. It was a double bill at that time, Waiting for Lefty Until the Day That I Die. And Hirschfeld captured both of those in a double drawing that he did, I think, for the Herald Tribune, and later published in Harper's Magazine. So this was a great breakout role. Clifford Odets is coming into his own, too. I mean, Odets would go on to write several important plays, would be a leading figure in the group theater, and between the two of them, they start to help to establish the group theater as an important acting company, really producing company, on Broadway and in the American theater. But it doesn't stop for Kazan. I mean, he's in another show, The Case of Clyde Griffiths, and Hirschfeld shows a drawing of a scene change at the show.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
And
it's very different.
It's very different.
It's from backstage.
It is more like a Don Freeman drawing.
Yeah.
Freeman,
who frequently liked to do drawings from different strange points. Strange vantage points. Is that correct? He was backstage struck.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Hirschfeld called him backstage struck. And he would often, while Hirschfeld would sit in the third row on the aisle to capture all the action, Freeman would often be backstage as the actors were getting ready to go on in the wings. There's a wonderful drawing I remember from Face the Music, a 1932 musical, where he's in this spotlight operator's chair. He was interested in that vantage point. And actually, between Hirschfeld and Don Freeman, you can get a real sense of the whole production.
Right, right.
And they were great friends. And so, who knows if Freeman had an influence, or whether this drawing was, it may have never been anything spoken, but it's just something that Al did, and Don would open up the paper and say, "Well, that's kind of like my drawing."
All right, so we got that one.
He was in Golden Boy, another very important Clifford Odets play.
And he was not in that drawing, though.
Not in that drawing. Right. A collection of three portraits. Hirschfeld is still, even as late as 1937, not always doing fully integrated drawings.
Right.
These are really just three portrait heads of Francis Farmer and Luther Adler and Roman Bonin?
I don't know. Bonin, maybe.
But Kazan starts to direct in 1935 a play that nobody remembers called The Young Go First for the group theater. And then in 1938, he directs Casey Jones. And Hirschfeld did draw that production, which featured Van Heflin, Charles Bickford, and Peggy Conklin in Casey Jones. The show itself was not a big, important show or a big hit, but it's a nice drawing.
I do have to ask, is this any relation to Grateful Dead Casey Jones?
No, it is not. Well, only in the sense that they're still talking about the same railroad engineer.
Oh, okay. Well, then yes, it is.
I don't know. I've never read the play. I don't know if there's any mention of cocaine or ladies in red or trouble ahead or trouble behind. We don't know.
Just had to ask.
For all you deadheads out there.
Okay, next. In 1939, he directed his third Thunder Rock.
Yes.
This is a play.
Yep. Again, for anybody who knows Frances Farmer, this is a very important play in her career, Clifford Odets play. And Kazan is really starting to feel he's beginning to understand what he's doing with directing.
Mm.
And he's getting better. And the group theater recognizes that he's a much, much better director than he is an actor.
Mm. Well, that's good.
Yeah. But he's still acting. I mean, don't get it wrong. Hirschfeld draws him in 1940 in a play called Night Music, which featured Jane Wyatt and Morris Karnofsky.
Mm.
And then in 1940, he's in a production of Lilium with Ingrid Bergman.
Mm.
The play's not done. It's a Molnar play, not done that much today, although this coming season there's going to be a revival of the musical adaptation of it, which is called Carousel.
Oh, Rodgers and Hammerstein. Look at that.
It was a very important play for to Molnar. Many different composers European composers had asked him to adapt it, but he thought the play was sort of too pure for that.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got the request from Rodgers and Hammerstein, he thought a musical in America, who would even know that it got done? And so he gave the rights. And of course, it's the only reason why we know the play today.
Right,
perhaps.
Right. Isn't that funny?
The last time that Kazan acts is in 1941, in the spring of 1941. He's in a play called Five Alarm Waltz.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know it, there's a reason for that. It's not a very important play or a very significant play, and it certainly was not a hit play. But Kazan would never appear on stage as an actor again after that. And he devotes himself completely to directing. In 1942, he directs Café Crown. Hirschfeld does two drawings, one for, I think, the Times and one for the Christian Science Monitor.
Really?
Because in 1942, there's this brief period. I think it only ends when he signs an exclusive arrangement with the New York Times.
Uh-huh.
But he starts doing these wonderful drawings for the Christian Science Monitor.
That's crazy.
Which had great drama coverage. I mean, it was
interesting.
It had great arts coverage. It was not. It sounds crazy, but it really was and it continues to be.
Interesting. Well, I like Café Crown because Sam Jaffe's in it.
Why do you like Sam Jaffe?
I have no idea why I like Sam Jaffe, but I saw these drawings, and every time I would look at them, I just assumed that the Sam Jaffe character was Elia Kazan. So then I got confused as to what Elia Kazan actually looked like and who Sam Jaffe was. So it's like an ongoing joke in the office.
Yes.
You know, is it Elia Kazan or is it actually Sam Jaffe?
They have a similar look.
Do they? Or are you just being nice to me?
Being nice.
He's being nice. Yeah, they don't look alike. Anyway.
Well, Café Crown, which has been revived, is an okay show. But 4 months later, he directs a much, much more important show, The Skin of Our Teeth by Thornton Wilder. Won the Pulitzer that year, is still being produced, has been revived not many times on Broadway, but in theaters across the country and around the world.
Yep.
And all I can say about that production, Hirschfeld did draw it for the Times, great front page, Arts and Leisure, well, it was still the drama section there, that sort of L-shaped drawing.
Yeah.
And he also did a drawing for the Christian Science Monitor.
Of course.
Because why not? Just of Florence Elridge and Frederick March. And he would draw it again in 1973 for The Lively Years.
Right. Right.
This book that he did with Brooks Atkinson, looking back on the last 50 years of the American theater, in which Hirschfeld used a combination of his older drawings and about 50 new drawings.
Mm.
Either he had not drawn the production originally, or he looked at his drawing and decided he could do better.
Yeah.
Because Hirschfeld loved to draw, and he liked to do it better. In the Hirschfeld Century book, we feature his drawings of the Watch on the Rhine.
And I think Waiting for Lefties in the Hirschfeld Century, isn't it?
It is in the Hirschfeld Century.
Which he redrew for The Lively Years as well.
Sure.
That was Kazan's first.
But the reason I bring up the Hirschfeld Century book is because, when I talk about the Lively Years book, I show the original drawing he did of Watch on the Rhine.
For the Times.
Yes, for the Times. Very busy drawing.
Very busy.
And the drawing he did for Lively Years, which is very simple and clean, sort of classic Hirschfeld.
Yep.
Kazan is establishing himself as a great director. His next show is actually a musical. He said that he was not really, he really didn't know how to direct musicals. He felt he was more of a stage manager. The show was called One Touch of Venus, and it was written by S.J. Perlman, who wrote the book, and Kurt Weill wrote the music, Ogden Nash, the lyrics. It was Perlman's great success on Broadway.
Oh, interesting.
And it has a place in the Hirschfeld story because when Al and Dolly get married, they go to honeymoon in Nantucket. They're sitting on the beach. Al said they were sitting on the beach for about 15 minutes.
Oh, my God.
And he realized... Bored. I mean, sitting out there, they he couldn't imagine doing something so dull. And so he turns to Dolly and says, how about we go into Boston and see... I don't know if it was a rehearsal or a preview of Sid's One Touch of Venus. And they go.
That's funny. And there's a great drawing.
There's a great drawing. There's actually photographs of Al drawing in the theater.
Oh, that's fun.
You know, so if you want to know what Al Hirschfeld looks like on his honeymoon, get the book Hirschfeld Online. There's a picture of him drawing in the the theater, and that's from One Touch of Venus.
Oh, that's funny.
But then Kazan goes on, Jabowski and the Colonel, Sundown Beach. These are not plays that are hugely significant. But they are ones that Kazan directed and that Hirschfeld drew.
That's the criteria for being on the podcast.
Yes, if Hirschfeld didn't draw it, it didn't exist. No. No, that's not true. But we don't talk about it.
Yeah.
But in 1947, Kazan directs two classics: Arthur Miller's All My Sons and Tennessee Williams' Streetcar Named Desire. And the reason we're talking about it is not because Hirschfeld drew either one of these original productions when they first were produced. And the reason he didn't draw those is not because he didn't want to or he didn't get the assignment. He was not in the country.
He was going around the world, Nady Cliches.
Yes, with S.J. Perlman.
Yep.
The 9 months he took off to do Westward Ha... is the longest period of time that he was away from Broadway in his 99 and a half years.
Wow.
Yeah. And he missed Brigadoon. I remember the Rodgers and Hammerstein organization contacted us. They were doing a new recording of Allegro, and they said, we can't seem to find the Hirschfeld drawing. Can you send over the Hirschfeld drawing? And I said, well, bad news.
Oh, he didn't draw it.
He didn't draw it because he wasn't in town.
Oh, that's sad.
The good news is that he would draw both All My Sons and Streetcar Named Desire, the original productions, for the Lively Years.
Yes.
And he would also do, in 1971, a series of drawings. A collector had approached him about doing drawings of just Pulitzer Prize-winning plays.
Mm.
And he would do two drawings for each play. One was a cast drawing that you might see in the paper.
Right.
The other would be a drawing of the playwright with the opening night program title page.
Right.
And he did five of these. They're now in the collection of the New York Public Library of the Performing Arts at Lincoln Center in New York. And I asked him why only five sets of these? And Al told me that it was because the fellow ran out of room in his apartment. He ran out of walls.
Wall space. That's funny.
But it did allow him to go back. He did
Tennessee Williams for this.
He did Tennessee Williams and Streetcar.
Yeah.
He did Sidney Kingsley and Men in White, which were also won the Pulitzer.
Yeah.
And in his Men in White drawing, it's a very crowded drawing that does feature Kazan because by the early 70s, Kazan is an important enough figure. Even though his role is not important, he's important. So
that's funny.
He gets to cover all bases. But Kazan is so successful and so popular at this point. There's a little jingle that people say. They say, Kazan, Kazan, the miracle man. Call him in as soon as you can. Now that was not a, you know, on the radio or anything, but people said it because, you know, he had the fairy dust.
Right.
Now, also in 1947, Kazan co-founds the Actor Studio with Lee Strasberg. Mm-hmm. He says to get actors out of the goddamn Walgreens drugstore and give them a place to develop their craft.
What's that mean? Actors like working?
Well, either working, but also hanging out there, sort of waiting for something to happen, waiting to be discovered in the Walgreens.
Really?
That was a very typical way of doing
really?
It.
Really? I didn't know that.
He wanted them to be able, I mean, they saw acting as an art, as a craft that you needed to work on.
Right.
That you weren't different than a shoemaker.
Mm-hmm.
You had to work at it, and you had to keep doing it to stay good.
Right.
And they wanted to create a place that could happen. Again, does not seem like a revolutionary concept now, but we are now talking 70 years ago.
Right.
It was a revolutionary concept. They emphasize the method approach to acting. They wanted to keep, you know, this is a very interesting period. I've talked about it before in Hirschfeld's career. The Actor Studio should have been the end of Al Hirschfeld's regular career drawing the theater. He had started off drawing these flamboyant figures like the Marx Brothers, like Mae West, like Edwin, who Hirschfeld said essentially drew themselves.
Right.
All he had to do was transcribe them.
They were already caricatures.
Exactly. And then here comes along method acting,
right,
and the playwrights to go with them.
Tennessee Williams,
Arthur Miller, doing plays about normal people, very normal people. And what is a caricaturist supposed to do with that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, normal people are the dullest people to draw. But Hirschfeld wasn't the exaggerated eyelashes of a Mae West or the grease paint mustache of a Groucho Marx. Sure, that's fun to draw, but that's all facade. Hirschfeld was really about character, and I think that is why his drawings have survived as much, and why they're so telling and important historical documents of these performances, and why they were so good at promoting the performances. And so even though the characters in the show are very normal people, they're characters. And for Hirschfeld, that's what he's about. Remember, he preferred to be called a characterist than a caricaturist.
Right.
Even though he talks about it in the world of Hirschfeld, about actors, you know, who want to be as, you know, like a pea in a pod, you know, they exude almost nothing. There was something for him to draw because I often say the meekest character.
Because there's a character. Yeah.
The meekest character in American drama might be Laura Wingfield in Glass Menagerie, but for Hirschfeld, there's something to draw there.
Right. It's just something different.
So, in 1949, Kazan directs the original production of Death of a Salesman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why Hirschfeld did not draw this production, we do not know.
He has no good excuse.
No good excuse. He was...
I'm calling him out.
I'm sure he went to the opening night. You know, he went to more opening nights than anybody in the 20th century. Now, 3 days after the opening, the Times did run a drawing of the Mothers, you know, Hirschfeld's drawing of the Mothers on Broadway, which did feature Mildred Dunnock from Death of a Salesman.
Right.
He would later do, when they had replacements for Death of a Salesman, he did a drawing of all the replacements coming into Broadway shows.
And we've talked about these drawings before, where they are a collection of different shows that are on Broadway currently that he would do.
Yeah,
thematic
drawings.
We've talked about fathers on Broadway, villains.
Sure.
And so this was the Mothers.
The great drawing that
Carol Channing
was in.
Right. What is it?
Supporting players whose numbers stopped the show.
Musical numbers stopped their shows,
yeah. Hirschfeld next draws a Kazan production in 1950 when he finally gets a chance to do a contemporaneous drawing of Streetcar. It's at City Center with Uta Hagen and Anthony Quinn.
Mm.
It's a great drawing. Then something very important happens in Kazan's career that would become a defining moment, and one that makes him a controversial figure.
Yep.
At this time, there was a Senator Joseph McCarthy, who was a demagogue. He believed that communists were infiltrating the government, and he started the House Un-American...
House Un-American Activities Committee, HUAC.
HUAC.
Yep.
And it was literally a witch hunt.
Yep.
They were looking for people. He destroyed lives. And they eventually decide to get into the entertainment community.
Yep.
And he wants to find people. And all of a sudden, actors, directors, producers are being called in front of this committee, asking if they are communist or if they've ever been a communist. And Kazan is called.
Right. Which is silly, because you can't actually press charges, I don't think.
No, the insidious thing about these HUAC committee hearings was nothing ever happened legally to the people.
They just wanted to tell everybody who the communists were.
Right, or they wanted to allege that they were communists.
Right, right.
And if you did not cooperate with the committee, you were put onto a blacklist. Studios wouldn't hire you.
Right.
Broadway producers wouldn't hire you. Television companies wouldn't hire you. It was very difficult.
Yeah.
It happened all in many different professions, but in the entertainment industry, it really kept people from doing their work. And it drove some people not only out of the business, but it drove them to their death.
Right.
Destroyed lives.
Well, this year too, Chaplin is his visa or his passport's revoked.
Right.
And he stays in Europe for the rest of his life.
Right. Right. So Kazan is called in front of the committee in January. This is in 1950, I think.
I think it's 52.
52.
I think it's 52. 52.
I think you're right. And he refuses to testify, but a producer in Hollywood lets him know that, really one of the studio bosses in Hollywood, lets him know that unless he testifies, they're not going to be able to work with him.
Mm-hmm.
And Kazan is really, he's an artist. He works in the theater. He works in films. He's really starting to feel his own in films. He had directed his first major film in 1945, A Tree Grows in Brooklyn.
Right.
Not really one of his great works, but he's starting to understand what he can do in film.
Right.
And he's already conquered the stage.
Right. Clearly.
He wants to direct. He wants to continue doing his art. And he recognizes that if he doesn't participate in these hearings, he's not going to be able to do his work. He does a lot of soul searching. He claims he meets with Clifford Odets, who was an old friend of his. And they decide that they would name the same names and each other. And he goes back to the committee, I think, in March of 52, and he does name 8 names. And that would have been enough, I suppose. But then he takes out a full-page ad in the New York Times justifying why he named names. And it is a debate that we're not going to have here. Kazan makes very good reasons why he did what he did. And he would later stick to those reasons in a great autobiography, A Kazan, A Life. But it ruined lives, and and he participated in something. He didn't stand up to oppression, and there are people who never forgave him for that.
Sure.
In 1999, when he gets an honorary Oscar, half the audience doesn't clap.
Right.
People wondering why they're giving this traitor, this rat, this award.
Yeah. And it is interesting, like, we would like to sit here and say, oh, I would definitely do that, or some people, I would never do that, but you really don't know until you're in that situation.
One hopes you never be, or
right,
will what, be in that
clearly,
situation.
Yeah. But it could go, it is a whole debate that we obviously are not going to solve today.
Above our pay grade.
Yes. But it is one of those things where you can see both sides.
You can see both sides. Yeah. And what's interesting about Hirschfeld is he had a lot of friends who were named, a lot of close friends. Gordon Kahn, who was one of his oldest friends and co-author of Manhattan Oasis, his first book on speakeasies, was literally the first Hollywood writer to be named.
Right.
He's not part of the Hollywood 10, but he is the one named before the Hollywood 10. Eddie Charteroff, another wonderful playwright and a very close friend with Hirschfeld, he was a frequent dinner guest at the Hirschfeld home, and Al told me that one night Charteroff comes over for dinner, The same night, Jerry Robbins names him in the hearings. Mm. And what Chodorov says to Al was, "Al, I've been touched by a fairy." And, you know, they, Hirschfeld saw what it did to people's lives and careers. So he was not unsympathetic. Mm-hmm. But Hirschfeld remained friends with everybody. It's, I think it was just his nature. He remained friends with the with Kazan, mm-hmm. who he called Gadge. You know, that was Kazan's nickname, Gadget. That's because good. When he, even going all the way back to his college years, he had this ability to fix things.
Oh,
and he was handy to have around. And so they called him Gadget and it got shortened to Gadge. Huh. And Kazan called Hirschfeld Hirsch.
Hirsch.
Gadge and Hirsch. And so after the 1999 honorary mm-hmm. Oscar, when Kazan comes back to New York, the place that they go to celebrate is the Hirschfeld home. So,
and Ilya Kazan gave Hirschfeld a cat.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Blackie?
Blackie. And Tiger.
And Tiger.
These were cats that...
Kazan cats.
The Kazan cats is exactly how Louise Hirschfeld uh-huh. would refer to them. And one could argue that they could have better names because Blackie was a black cat and Tiger was a tiger striped cat.
Well, another podcast.
That was another podcast of cat names. But these cats hung around the Hirschfeld's not only home, but particularly Blackie liked to come up to the studio and sit on his drawing table while he drew.
There's a great picture of Blackie with Hirschfeld on the drawing table.
Oh, yes. Wonderful, wonderful photograph. Yeah. I came to know Blackie because when the house was sold, Louise needed a home for the cat. And... she said, "You live in the country. You should take him." And of course, what can you say? We took the cat, and it didn't. It wanted to be in show business.
Yeah, it didn't work out.
It was my other three cats did not like Blackie either.
Yeah.
And eventually, we had to give Blackie to a CBS a technical director because Blackie obviously needed to be in show business.
And he was much happier then.
The film that Kazan makes after Naming Names is On the Waterfront, arguably one of the great pictures in Brando's career, Marlon Brando, who had really gotten his start in a Kazan production, you know, came to fame in Streetcar.
Right.
And then later the film of Streetcar.
Wait, he was in the original production of Streetcar?
Marlon Brando?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh, look
he
at me.
He was Stanley Kowalski. Okay.
Jeez, I don't know what and, I'm talking about. But Kazan introduced... Yeah, so Kazan kind of introduced Brando to the world.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Brando had been on stage before. Mm-hmm. He may have even made movies before. But Streetcar...
But it was his breakout
It was his breakout role. And Brando recognized that Kazan could bring out of him things that no other director could.
Mm.
And although he said... there's some correspondence, Brando writing to friends saying, after Kazan names names, he says, "I'll never work with him again." Well, maybe I would. And if he asked me, maybe I should, because he's been very important to my career right. and he does very good things for my work.
I do kind of good stuff when I'm with him.
Yes.
Oh, that's funny.
But in On the Waterfront, Brando very famously plays Terry Malloy, who and it's the story of dock workers and the union, and Terry Malloy ends up testifying against his union bosses who have really ruined his friend's lives, killed his brother, and it was really it was in many ways a metaphor for Kazan and Bud Schulberg, who wrote it, who also named names, sort of explaining why they did what they did. Very powerful film. Although Hirschfeld did not draw it when it originally came out, he would later draw it in the 70s for IBM's Movie to Remember series.
Right, right. And that was just a bunch of movies. Were they being played on television? Or what do... Because they're ads in the Times, and it's all these old movies.
Yes, IBM presented a series of film on television.
On TV, okay.
And it was a big deal. This was the beginning of the age of the VCR.
Right.
And
videotape. Really?
Oh, yeah.
There were VCRs in 1973?
1977.
Oh, okay.
It's the very beginning.
Yeah, that must be, that's like the really fancy houses.
Yes.
Had VCRs.
And IBM presents the movies with only one advertisement.
Oh.
You know, this was before TCM or any cable channel showed movies without advertisements because we all had to suffer through multiple advertisements to see any movie. But if you never saw it, you know, if it was an
that
older film.
Kills it.
Yeah. You know, it's, and the killer is, oh, we'll be right back.
Yeah. okay, that's what I figured.
And so Hirschfeld actually got a chance to redraw some of the films that he had drawn originally.
Yep.
Most famously, Singing in the Rain, which originally Hirschfeld drew for MGM when it came out. Mm-hmm. And it's a very busy drawing with Gene Kelly and Debbie Reynolds and Donald
O'Connor. It's a nice drawing, but it is very busy.
It's very busy. Yeah, yeah, there's showgirls there.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
And when he draws it for IBM in the 70s, it's just Gene Kelly and an umbrella.
Yeah.
It says everything classic. You need to say.
Yep.
So he would draw other Kazan films. And Kazan for films, he doesn't stop doing things on Broadway, but he really gives his focus to it. 1955, he directs, I know, one of your favorite films.
This is one of my favorite films, East of Eden.
East of Eden.
Yes, it is.
John Steinbeck's East of Eden.
Yep.
Which introduces James Dean.
Right.
James Dean's
first real movie role. He would only have three because he would die, just a few months later.
Yeah.
He would die. East of Eden, Rebel Without a Cause, and of course, one of my other favorites, Giant.
Okay, right.
But he would die, I think, 2 weeks after maybe it was the day after he finished filming Giant. But James Dean was a method actor.
Right.
I think he studied with Lee Strasberg, or maybe it was Stella Adler, wherever Eartha Kitt was. That's where James Dean was. but anyway, what were we? Oh, and I was saying earlier, I can't believe Hirschfeld didn't draw East of Eden. Because it has so many great Hirschfeld people in it.
Such as?
Raymond Massey.
Oh, yeah.
Julie Harris,
who
has a ton of drawings.
Of course.
I don't even remember how many Julie Harris has. It's a lot.
25, 26.
I think it's like 40-something.
We'll have to check.
Okay, we'll check it. Jo Van Fleet, who is actually in Camino Real.
Right.
I just looked it up. Lois Smith. Who's later in Grapes of Wrath?
Oh yes,
on Broadway.
A great actress.
I feel like there was someone else. I said I was like, I can't believe Burl Ives.
Burl Ives.
I don't know. And Paul Osborne did the screenplay, and he was a friend of Hirschfeld.
Oh yeah, they were great friends.
It was like Elie Kazan directed it. It was the perfect mix of everybody, but it was a Warner Brothers film.
Right.
And he wasn't doing a lot of work for Warner Brothers, so it does make sense.
At that time.
Right, right.
You know, although he had gotten his first caricatures for Warner Brothers films.
Oh, that's true. Look at that.
But in the mid-50s, he was working for MGM. Mm-hmm. He was working for United Artists.
That's true.
Whether it was the art director who said, would love to have Hirschfeld, but, you know, it'll look like an MGM film. Or, you know, people will think because in the 1950s, people still saw Hirschfeld much more as an MGM artist.
As a musicals, like the MGM musicals.
Oh, sure.
Like fun and not dramatic. Because the United Artists film drawings are where he really starts getting dramatic with the movies. Is that correct?
Sure.
Is that fair to say? Because I think of Defiant Ones.
Sure.
And that
was 57.
Oh, it's 59?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought it was 57. My brother told me the other day, he was like, oh, the podcast is so funny. Catherine always corrects David and then it ends up that she's wrong. So from now on, if David says a year, I'm going to say, yes, David, you are correct. But anyway.
Well, yes, he does more, he does a lot of the message pictures for United Artists, and whereas at MGM he did comedies and musicals.
Oh, we were both wrong. Defiant Ones is 58.
There it is.
So there we go.
Split the baby.
Fine. All right.
I think there's a lot of reasons. Probably, even if a Warner Brothers art director thought that, wow, I'd love to use Hirschfeld, he may have thought that it wasn't the appropriate film for Hirschfeld.
Right.
And we see these people as Hirschfeld people, but let's face it, at that time.
And they were doing a lot of stuff that never was drawn by Hirschfeld, I'm sure.
Clearly. Julie Harris had been drawn maybe two or three times.
Right, because she was little in this picture.
Yeah,
she's very little.
Yeah, he had just drawn her in Member of the Wedding, where she plays literally a little girl.
A little girl.
So,
but I know that she worked with Kazan a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Julie Harris, yeah. And I think a lot of those people did. But anyway, we won't talk about East of Eden anymore. There's one drawing of James Dean and it's like in a group. It's like a movies. It's not the movies
it was,
drawing.
It was made into a print called There's No Business Like Show Business. Yeah,
and he's got a little cowboy hat, so it's his giant.
Yes.
Because it's a giant taste, but...
That's the only drawing of James Dean.
Yeah.
I would be remiss to say that, you know, Kazan had special relationships with a number of playwrights.
Mm-hmm.
There was Clifford Odets and obviously Arthur Miller. And while we've talked about Streetcar Named Desire, we haven't really emphasized what a unique relationship that Kazan had with Tennessee Williams.
Right.
He really helped sort of midwife some of the many of the great Tennessee Williams productions. He directed many of them. Streetcar, he had directed. He directed Camino Real.
Yep.
He directed The Rose Tattoo. Mm-hmm. And there was something about it. Although they were very unlikely friends or mm-hmm. collaborators, because Kazan was a Greek immigrant. He loved women, had a number of affairs.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Was kind of a tough guy, you know, Tennessee Williams was none of those things.
Mm.
Yet they felt that they had this sort of mysterious bond, and Kazan thought it's because they were both freaks.
Mm.
But Tennessee Williams realized...
Well, opposites attract.
Opposites perhaps do attract. They had no type of... I mean, this was no intimate relationship.
No.
But Kazan essentially... rewrites Cat in a Hot Tin Roof, changes the focus and the third act, which Tennessee Williams would later try to put back in, and it would not be as effective.
Mm.
Hirschfeld did not draw the original production of Cat in a Hot Tin Roof, again, for no reason that we know
excuse.
Of.
No excuse.
But he did draw Burl Ives as Big Daddy in a drawing, I think, for Collier's.
Reasons
for rejoicing in the theater, and so Burl Ives is in that. But so Tennessee Williams and Kazan would have a long relationship.
Yeah.
We see that because when Hirschfeld does the only play that Hirschfeld ever illustrated was Streetcar Named Desire,
mm-hmm.
and when he did it, he did not think about the original production. Hirschfeld liked to work from life. He liked to see the actors moving. And in 1982, if you wanted to see that, you got a videotape.
Mm.
And he got a videotape of the film version that Kazan had directed.
Right, of Streetcar.
Starring Vivian Leigh and Marlon Brando. And the drawings for that book are very clearly based on the film.
Right.
And you should definitely look up those drawings because they're wonderful.
They're very nice, yeah. And it's a very, very nice book.
A very nice book. earlier this week, Catherine and I gave a new presentation over at the New School, actually, for Parsons. Ben Catcher has this wonderful comic and picture book symposium that meets every mm-hmm. week, and they bring in different people. And they asked us to come in, and we didn't want to give our usual Hirschfeld Century talk.
We loved. A great talk. The Hirschfeld Century talk.
If she say so herself.
If I do say so myself, it's wonderful. But we developed this book talk where we focus on Hirschfeld's book illustrations and his writings and books as well.
Right. Hirschfeld by the Book.
Yep.
That covered from his very first book cover.
Breaking into the Movies, 1928.
Yes.
Which is really old. If you think about it,
that's old.
That's a very old book for him to be illustrating.
Well, he was a very young man. He was 25
years
old.
Yeah, I know.
And it goes all the way up.
And look what I've done. I've got a podcast.
We talked about the various books that he wrote. Various collections of his work, books that he illustrated.
Collaborations, like with S.J. Perlman.
And Brooks Atkinson. Yeah. With Ralph Schoenstein and My Year in the White House Doghouse. You know, so there's some crazy books. But also Vicious Circle, the book of Margaret Case Harriman's book of the Algonquin Roundtable,
mm-hmm.
where he did some really classic portraits.
Yeah.
Fred Allen's books.
Yeah, classic.
Garson Kanin's book, Do Re Mi.
Mm-hmm. very forgotten John Mason Brown books, Accustomed As I Am. Are they really? Because you know what? I even looked on eBay for an Accustomed As I Am, and I couldn't find one. That's how obscure this book is. But it was a lot of fun. And one of the books we talked about, obviously, was the only play he's ever illustrated, which is Streetcar.
Streetcar. Yeah. Yes. No, so it's funny how all these things sort of melt together.
Yeah.
I wanted to sort of wrap up Ilya Kazan. He had done several portraits of Kazan through the years. Just literally separate portraits of Kazan.
And before we get started, it's so funny because this happens so often with me, most notably with Jack Lemmon, but I had never seen a photo of Ilya Kazan. When would I have ever seen a photo of him? I guess from East of Eden, but I never looked one up. And so whenever I see these wonderful Hirschfeld portraits of him, he looks so short. And I just assume that, like, oh, maybe, you know, he's this cute little, like, man, he's like 5'4", 5'5". But he's not. He's normal size. Because
what are you saying?
Well, he just looks, he looks like he is a short person in these drawings for whatever reason. But I did finally look up an actual photo of him, and it does look like him, but it was a East of Eden photo next to James Dean, and he's, like, normal size. He's, like, 5'11". And this happens so often with me where I look at people, I finally look up their photos, I'm like, oh, that does look like, that does look just like Ilya Kazan, meaning it looks like the Hirschfeld drawing. So I always, so between Sam Jaffe and Ilya Kazan looking short, my image of him is very skewed.
Right.
So let's get into the portraits of Kazan.
Well, there's besides the cast drawings, there's a drawing that he does of Kazan around the time he's directing East of Eden.
Right. It was a Collier's.
Yes.
It's a Collier's column on the shoot, on the filming of East of Eden.
Right. But the great portrait is in 1959. He does a portrait of Kazan on the set of JB, which was an Archibald MacLeish play that starred Raymond Massey.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Christopher Plummer and Pat Engel.
And there's a great Hirschfeld of that.
Great Hirschfeld. Wonderful set by Boris Aronson. Mm-hmm. Hirschfeld thought it was a wonderful set. And when he draws Kazan, it's on the set of JB, and this drawing appeared on the cover of Theater Arts magazine.
Right.
And is now in the collection of Princeton University.
Yep. And we brought it for the Hirschfeld Century exhibition.
Yes.
At the New York Historical Society.
And then beneath it, we put in an iPad where you could swipe through 20 different productions that Kazan had either directed or appeared in.
Yeah.
And so that was a great opportunity. We could do a whole show just like that.
Yeah, that was really, that was the coolest part of the exhibition.
The last drawing he did of Kazan is actually for Show Magazine in one of his famous feuds.
Oh,
he was feuding at that time with Lee Strasberg about Lincoln Center, the repertory company of Lincoln Center. Mm. So it's a fun drawing. Kazan is on the couch and Lee Strasberg is his therapist. The last stage play that Hirschfeld draws of a Kazan production is Marco Millions, that he did for Lincoln Center, the repertory company of Lincoln Center, although Lincoln Center itself had not been built yet.
Right.
And then the last
and
film...
And what year was that?
That was 1964.
Oh, wow.
Lincoln Center would open up in 1966.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, complicated story of the repertory company of Lincoln Center Theater. Mm. The last film of Kazan's that Hirschfeld would draw was The Arrangement in 1969, a film that he wrote and directed and starred Faye Dunaway and Kirk Douglas.
Yeah, it's a great drawing.
Right.
I got a nasty comment from someone when I posted that on the Facebook page.
What was the comment?
Did Kirk Douglas beat his wife or something?
Not to my knowledge. They're still married.
She was mad about Kirk Douglas. I'll have to Google it. I'll have to look up the post. But some lady was mad that we had posted a Kirk Douglas caricature.
Listen, we'll take all your comments. We won't remember them, obviously, but we'll take all of
them. Oh, I remember all the bad ones. Anytime someone says something bad, I'm on them. Anyway, but it is a very nice drawing. Is that a UA film?
United Artists? No, that was drawn for the New York Times.
Oh, because it looks, doesn't it look like, well, it reminds me of... you know the one I'm talking about.
I wish I did.
With Patty Duke. The Helen
Keller. Oh, and the Miracle Worker.
Yeah, because their hair is both kind of, it's very active.
Well, they're, and he's
And they're
shaking
both
her.
Like strangling people. Yes. Yeah.
Patty Duke was not strangled Anne Bancroft in The Miracle Worker. She's
The Miracle Worker, that's what it's called.
Yes. Thank you. That's why I said it.
Oh, you said The Miracle Worker?
Twice.
I was definitely listening. Okay.
Another day at the office. Yeah. Anyway, so you can always send us your comments.
Oh, advice. We would love to hear your comments.
Ideas for podcasts,
yes,
or things on our website, or exhibition ideas. You can send that to info@alhirschfeldfoundation.org. Of course, that's our website, yep. alhirschfeldfoundation.org,
where you can look up all the drawings we've talked about and more.
Yeah, there'll be links, obviously, in the show notes to all the drawings that we have discussed. Going to the website, you will learn, we do spotlights on different drawings. There's news on there. You can look up any show by year, by subject matter, by performer, by production, by publication. Yeah. It's really a lot of great things. And now until October 18th, you can go to a Hirschfeld pop-up gallery in Manchester, Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
Take home a piece of Hirschfeld art if you want to, or just come in there with your kids or your grandparents. I don't care. You can look for Nina's. We have a easy, medium, and hard section.
Yeah, it's very cute. It's printouts of Hirschfeld drawings, excuse me, and you have to circle the Nina's.
Right.
And it's a lot of fun.
So there's T-shirts.
And I tested out each of the drawings before, and I could find all the Nina's. So.
You are such a talented person. They had to pass the test.
I had to nix some ideas because I couldn't find all the Nina's.
If you want to find our podcast on our website, alhirschfeldfoundation.org/podcasts.
That's with an S, and S is for Strasbourg. Look at that.
You can read some of these stories and many more in The Hirschfeld Century, A Portrait of an Artist and His Age, published by Knopf in 2015. And you can look us up on Facebook.
The Al Hirschfeld Foundation, and Twitter, we're at Al Hirschfeld, and Instagram, we're at Al Hirschfeld as well.
And we try to post something every day, usually some highlight in history or drawing published on this date in history.
There were a lot of drawings today.
How many?
14. 14. I went for Vernal Bagnarius in Furthermo.
I love that drawing.
But there was another one I really liked. I can't remember what it was now, but I considered it. But
you picked the right one. That's a great drawing.
My job is so hard.
We actually do work, and we do a lot of it here. Trust me. In any event, thank you very much for listening. Tell your friends, and just as importantly, write a review.
I love reading the reviews. It's my favorite thing.
But more importantly than pleasing Catherine is it lets other people know about it.
Yes.
That's how it gets, related podcasts.
The other podcast people
so if you think this is something worth listening to, you can rate us, you can review us on iTunes, and it really does, it's a big help. So we appreciate it. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you when we do.
All right. Bye.